Introduction. Supervillains of the Ancient Church. Judas. The name itself means traitor now. In the story of the gospel, there are villains as well as heroes, and Judas is the villain of all villains in the Christian story. Pilate the governor and Caiaphas the high priest are a close second and third. The story has everything we love, a hero we can cheer, and a pack of villains we can hiss. And the villains are essential. Without them, there is no story. Without the evil, the hero never has the chance to be good. Without Judas's betrayal, there is no crucifixion. And without the crucifixion, there is no redemption. It's one of the mysteries of evil. Somehow, the wickedest plots are the things that God uses to save us from the wickedest plots. What we intend for evil, God turns into good. And in the story of early Christianity, it's often the villains who give us the outlines. By a miracle of grace, they become the occasions for Christianity to become more Christian. The church, faced with evil from the outside and inside, is forced to become more what it was always meant to be. So here's something you don't see too often: a celebration of the villains in Christian history. Thank God for them, because we couldn't be Christian without them. 4 centuries in 5 minutes. In 4 centuries, Christianity grew from a tiny Palestinian sect to the dominant faith of the Mediterranean world. Along the way, it had to face vicious persecutions, which were bad enough, but the enemies from within were harder to face. The New Testament tells us most of what we know about the very beginnings of the Christian movement. We know the story of Jesus, the early days of the church under the apostles, and the travels of St. Paul. Already by the end of the Acts of the Apostles, the church had started to spread to all nations, just as Jesus had commanded. See Matthew 28, 19-20. After that, we have thousands of pages of history to sort through. As Christianity grew rapidly, it began to attract attention. And only about 30 years after the ascension of Christ, the Emperor Nero, one of Christianity's favorite villains, began the long series of persecutions that would continue for 2.5 centuries. Now, with Christianity recognized as an illegal cult by the Roman authorities, we begin to have good eyewitness history from both inside and outside the church, not just in bits and pieces, but in almost embarrassing abundance. Great Christian writers, such as Tertullian and Justin Martyr, tell us exactly what their church was like. Pagan enemies, such as Celsus, tell us what the scene looked like to educated and hostile Romans. Some of the villains from this period are the notorious persecuting emperors. But this is also when we begin to see important heresies coming out. Groups that call themselves Christian, but don't believe what the great church believes. People often think of orthodoxy as the narrow line from which any deviation is heresy. This is wrong. The modern scholars who emphasize the diversity of early Christianity are right. Catholic Christianity was, and still is, a broad rainbow of different ideas, and most of the ones that were around in earliest times are still with us. But Christians gradually had to draw lines to show where the broad field of Christianity ended and something else began. Orthodoxy was always a majority decision. The heretics were always in the minority compared to the great church, a term coined by the pagan anti-Christian writer Celsus to describe what was as obvious to him as it was to his Christian enemies. These heresies seemed, and were, dangerous at the time. But they were doing the church a big favor. A Christian had to define more and more carefully what it meant to be a Catholic Christian. In this way, said the great Latin theologian Tertullian, even as the arguments of the opposing party are destroyed, our own explanations are being built up. Or, as St. Augustine would put it later, quote, The fevered restlessness of the heretics stirs questions about many articles of the Catholic faith, but the need to defend them forces us to investigate them more accurately, understand them more clearly, and proclaim them more earnestly. So the question raised by an adversary becomes the occasion of instruction. Unquote. Even though Christianity was an illegal cult, the church, according to the sociologist Rodney Stark, continued to grow for the first 2.5 centuries or so at an astonishing rate of about 40% per decade. Bursts of persecution produced heroic martyrs to inspire the faithful, but long intervals of relative peace allowed the church to grow as an institution. The Roman government couldn't have hit on a better formula for spreading Christianity if it had tried. By the year 312, Christians almost certainly made up the single largest religious group in the Roman Empire. That was the year everything changed. Constantine declared himself a Christian and won the empire under the banner of the cross. Now Christianity vaulted from illegal cult to the emperor's favored religion. But what was Christianity? Just as the faith had triumphed, an obscure priest named Arius brought the whole of it into question. Much of the next century would be taken up by the Arian question. Is Christ really God, as the church had always believed, or only a sort of deputy under God, called God by courtesy of the real God? With one brief exception, Julian the Apostate, who tried to revive paganism but found that rigor mortis had already set in, all the emperors after Constantine claimed to be Christian. That in itself created a new problem for Christianity. It was assumed in Roman government that the emperor controlled everything. But did he control the church? It was an especially important question when the emperor was Arian. Almost exactly a century after Arius, a bishop named Nestorius caused a new controversy that was almost as divisive as the Arian question. Was Mary Mother of God, or only Mother of the Christ? Once again, the church was forced to define its long-held assumptions more carefully. By raising questions, a wrong teaching had given Catholic Christian theology a good, hard shove. Nestorius is perhaps the last great villain of the patristic age. Soon after his time, the ancient world fades into the Middle Ages. So we've just finished our 5-minute tour of 4 centuries of Christian history. But then there's Christian legend, and the villains in legend are at least as colorful as the villains in history. Legendary villains and what they teach us. Sometimes it's hard to sort out what's history and what's legend. But legend has its uses for the historian, too. A legend may or may not preserve history, as in historical fact, but it does preserve a record of what people believed when the legend was current. Legend is a history of the mind. For some of these legends, we dip into a class of literature called apocrypha, or sometimes pseudepigrapha. Apocrypha means hidden things in Greek, and it originally referred to concealed writings of secretive sects like the Gnostics. Since these writings were usually falsely attributed to some famous figure, like an apostle, apocrypha soon came to mean fake scriptures. In modern times, Protestants have used the term to refer to the books of the Old Testament that Catholics accept but Protestants don't. The term pseudepigrapha was invented by scholars to avoid all the confusion around the term apocrypha. It means writings falsely attributed to some author. Many of these tales are quite colorful. You'll see how much trouble Judas and his wife had with chicken dinners that wouldn't stay put, for example. When people spend a lot of time thinking about characters in any story, they want to know more about them. It's only natural that the characters in the New Testament accumulated a lot of fan fiction. We can laugh at these stories now, but we shouldn't forget to ask ourselves what they mean. Why did people want to tell stories like these? What can we learn about Christian thought while we're laughing? So, if you're ready, it's time to learn what we can from the most hated characters in Christian history and legend. And we're going to start right off with the most hated of them all, Judas Iscariot.